Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Councilmember Tony Heil from Bridgeport, PA. And if you've listened to the podcast over the past year, I've talked with many guests, but I've also spoken to people who represent me, my borough council member, Kyle Schenk, my state representative, Tim Briggs, my county commissioner, Ken Lawrence, and even my congresswoman, Madeline Dean. But today, it's the highest level yet that represents me, until hopefully in a year I can talk to the person who's my president, but I don't want to now. My U.S. Senator, Senator Bob Casey. Senator, thank you so much for having me today.
Tony, good to be here with you. Thank you.
I really appreciate your story. It's unique to Pennsylvania, and I think hopefully will encourage the right kind of people to run for office. Now, you have run for office a few times. You have a famous family name. Did you always think that you were going to get into public service, or is it something where, you know, it just happened?
Yeah, Tony, I think the short answer is no, I didn't. If you had asked me in college, I probably would have said I probably won't run for office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of that, I guess, had its origins in my father's elections. Were when I was in college, he had three primary losses for governor behind him. And I think at that point I thought, my goodness, if someone as good as he was as a person and honorable and decent and caring, if he can't win, why would I dive into that? So I frankly was, in those years, probably maybe a little cynical about it, and that created, I think, some distance from it. Later, and maybe that's maybe because he was finally able to win on his fourth try, after I was out of college, maybe that reawakened a spark in me that I should maybe can think about it someday. But it was not preordained. It was not something that he ever talked about with us, like, you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was very much a parent, as my mother was, where they wanted us to make kind of our own determination about our future. That was true as well as when it came to other activities growing up and, you know, sports. I mean, he was a great athlete, but he didn't say you have to participate in this or that sport. He kind of let us make up our own mind on it. But I don't know the precise moment where I thought I would run for public office, but I think I've at best I had mixed feelings in college, but probably even more decidedly against it.
Now, you're my first senator I've talked to on the podcast, but you're not my first state auditor. I've talked with Eugene D. Pasquale recently,
right.
Rob Sand out from Iowa.
Uh-huh.
But in that position, you get to do a lot. You get to have some power. You don't need to have some 49 other people blocking you from doing it.
It's a great job.
Yeah. Did that make you wish you could do that, where you can just get stuff done, as opposed to, I got to get 49 other people at least to agree with me?
Yeah, it is the difference between being a legislator and being in an executive position. Auditor General was an office that I knew a lot about, or at least I thought I knew a lot about it, had an interest in, mostly, again, because my father had run for that office successfully in 1968. And when he got there, believe it or not, and maybe it's not too hard to believe, it was a department that was auditing all of the school districts, and still is, all of the executive branch agencies and state government. But guess what? It did not have a single CPA in the whole place. So it was more of a political, they would hire auditors based upon your politics, whether if you're a Democratic auditor general, Republican auditor general. And the department itself was often used, I know this won't shock too many people, but it sounds pretty alarming today, as a fundraising operation. So people within the office were required to contribute to the Democratic State Committee or the Republican State Committee, depending on who the elected official was. So it wasn't a very professional operation until he got there. He immediately began to bring in CPAs and started up the standards. So by professionalizing the department and making it a hard-hitting professional auditing agency, and by using the press, by sending out press releases with school district audits, he became pretty well known. So I knew the potential of the department, but I also knew that it had run into lots of trouble between his service and the time that I got there. We had one Auditor General go to jail, Auditor General Al Benedict. There were others who had trouble along the way. So I thought it was a place where I could make a difference, even though most of the major reforms have been undertaken by him in the 70s.
Well, now you're making a difference in the Senate. And what got me to think about wanting to talk with you is I follow a lot of people on Twitter, someone named Niles Francis, who's a really cool election Twitter person, young man, a few others, and they talk about how hard it is to recruit people to run for Senate.
Right.
You were asked to run.
Right.
And you had a big name. Do you feel like a duty both to service and to the state and country on those issues? Like, I might, you know, it takes some ego, but, you know, we need to win this. If I'm the best person, I better do it.
Yeah, I think I'll try to shorten this because it's a long story, but I've been, first of all, blessed to have the opportunity to run for any public office.
Mm-hmm.
I felt blessed. Maybe it took a couple weeks to feel blessed after you lose, but I ran in a primary for governor against Ed Rendell and lost pretty soundly.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to, I guess, appreciate the lessons learned from losing and appreciate, frankly, the privilege it is to run for governor even if you lose. It's a great privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lost, but I was one of the top three people in the state to get the chance to try to be governor. Ed Rendell won. He beat Mike Fisher in the general election, but he beat me in the primary. So we were the only three people running that year, and I finished third out of three. But it was a privilege to have done it because there's nothing that's more of a privilege than to run. I would encourage people to try to win if you're mm-hmm. going to run. Encouraging people to run for office. You don't want to run just to run. You want to run to win. But it's a privilege. So there I was in having been elected Auditor General twice and then losing a primary for governor in 2002, but then coming back in 2004 running for state treasurer, which is a wonderful job. It's as good a job as you could have in any government. And I was looking forward to serving that office at least for 4 years and learning a ton. I mean, think about what the state treasurer does. You have pre-audit authority. You can stop a governor from spending before an expenditure is made. That's awesome power. But you also learn a lot about the state employees' pension system, the state teachers' pension fund. You have all these opportunities to learn and to have an impact on policy as state treasurer. That's what I was looking forward to. But because I had won by so much, I set an all-time vote record. People in Washington noticed, so they started calling me saying, we would like you to run for the Senate in 2006, take on Senator Santorum and lead the effort to taking back the Senate. I was flattered. I thought that was great that they were calling. I thought I would listen intently for weeks or months and then say no. That's what I thought I would do. I think in so many ways, like in a lot of marriages, my wife did a really good job of challenging me.
Mm-hmm.
She said, are you going to think seriously about this? And I said, yes. And she said, I don't believe you. You sound like you're just going to kind of go through the motions, take some phone calls, and then say no because you want to run for governor again, right? That's kind of in your DNA. She challenged me to think more seriously and to talk to people about the difficulty, forget the job, just the difficulty of winning against a powerful incumbent who was on his way to being majority leader. He was third in leadership. He ended up spending about $27 million, I think. We raised a lot of money, but I never thought I'd be running against someone who could raise that kind of money. So Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader at the time, or I should say he was the Democratic leader, not the Majority Leader, and Chuck Schumer is head of the campaign committee, Senate Campaign Committee, started calling and recruiting. And again, I thought I would ultimately say no, but the more I thought about it, two things were pushing me. One was the opportunity to be able to have an impact on an issue like healthcare, not knowing we'd do something as grand and as far-reaching as the Affordable Care Act, but I thought we could do a lot on children's health insurance, which is a major interest for me, and state government led to some good auditing and work we did. And I could have an impact on issues like healthcare and children's issues, not to mention long-term care and senior issues, and do something for the state. So that the job and the impact of the job was weighing on me. The other thing which weighed on me was the obligation that I felt to take this on. If that many people wanted me to take on a powerful incumbent to try to lead the effort to gain a Senate majority, I felt I had it warranted a serious examination. So I felt that pull and that obligation strongly. And when I launched the campaign, it was early March of 2005, I can't say that I was 100% confident that it was the right decision and I was going to win at that time.
Right.
Both of which were doubtful.
Because a lot happened in 2005 with the president at that time. You went from okay popularity to not so well liked.
But as time went on, I felt better and better about it. And I was sure glad I was running. But it was hard. It was a very hard race.
And, you know, it's interesting. I remember that race really well. I was involved in politics in Pennsylvania then. And you know that while it wasn't a bruising primary, there were people pushing back.
Right.
And now people's perceptions of you are a lot better. Like, Democratic, like in Pennsylvania. Well-deserved, I would say. Do you look back and look at it in terms of, you didn't know what to... Look, haha, you, I am this guy. You don't underestimate me. Because, like, when President Trump became president, you quickly became, as some people called, woke Bob Casey. You were one of the first people literally in line at the airport when they were trying to bar people from coming in. Like, you weren't just sending a press release. You have become very, very, very active. And I look at what the president's like with power. I look what you were like with power and others who I've talked to in this podcast. It's a roundabout way of saying, do you think that power changes a person or reveals their character?
Well, I think it probably is more of a revelation of who the person is.
Oh, good, because that's what I was going with.
Yeah. I want to agree with the host. No, but I think that's true. And in the case of what happened when the president came into office, I was outraged about his the way he conducted himself in the campaign, the way he would talk about women. I mean, there were things about his character and his approach to communicating with the electorate that outraged me. I did not expect to be as outraged by his policy. I thought he would try to tack more to the middle. But this is a guy who ran as a populist and is governing as a right-wing, a social right-wing corporate Republican. And it explains why a lot of Republicans have been forced into complicity in a lot of ways, or allowing themselves to do that. Because every right-wing goal has been either achieved or on its way to being achieved when you consider rigging the tax code for big corporations and rich people, whether it's appointing the most extreme far-right appellate court judges and Supreme Court justices, whether it's a tax on women, a tax on labor. I mean, go down the list. If you were right-wing on social issues or on fiscal or corporate issues, you got everything you wanted from Donald Trump. So caused me to be more not just vigilant, but more determined to speak out and to fight against that.
And do you see, you know, the way you talk about it and the way you talk about the president and the way you talked about the last president too, with your family history and also your involvement, does that, I don't want to say offend your sensibilities, but you take pride in government, right?
Right.
Character, I think, needs to matter, and it feels unfortunate to me that so many people who defend this say, well, that's just politics.
Yeah.
I don't think that it should be politics, should it?
No, character matters a lot, and we're finding that out with this president. And we found it out in a very positive, constructive way with President Obama. I mean, he was a model in terms of trying to do things the right way, trying to be comply not just with the law, but comply with ethical standards and standards of basic decency.
Mm-hmm.
He conducted himself well on the public stage, but in private, and I know this because I spent some time with him on the road, as a husband and father. I mean, I remember it didn't get a lot of attention, but I remember being on a bus with him starting in the spring of 08, and I could tell by listening to him talking to his daughters when he called them at night.
Mm-hmm.
He'd say, put Sasha on the phone, I want to talk to her. And it wasn't, the only person listening was me. And there's literally no one else on that bus at times. So character matters. And it's why when I read the the memorandum of the phone call with the Ukrainian president, President Zelensky, President Trump, as soon as I read the words, you need to help us with we need you to do a favor though, and bringing up the Bidens and bringing up the CrowdStrike debunk theory about the 2016 election, that was immediately offensive to me.
Right.
Because all the red flags went up. Wait a minute, you're on a government telephone in a government office talking about an election. That is wrong, categorically wrong, always wrong, wrong in every circumstance. So that those basic rules about how you should conduct yourself as a public official are critically important, and they're now the subject of an impeachment trial.
Right. That's not what you expected when you ran in 05, right?
Not at all.
But you mentioned about people being complicit, and I'm not looking to, well, I could when I go home talk about the people I don't like, but
yeah.
Is it hard, especially someone maybe thinking about running for office of any kind? You have to work with people who, on the one hand, you say, my good friend from so-and-so,
right.
Is my dear friend, but I think he's the worst person in the world. Like, how? I don't go to work like that. I don't want my coworker to lose their job, but everyone here wants half their coworkers to lose their job in some way. So how is that dynamic with getting things done? Because, you have talked in Pennsylvania about accomplishing things.
Yeah.
It's got to be a weird, hard dynamic that people need to get used to.
It is. It's difficult because, look, I know how difficult it can be when you have a president of your own party. Sometimes I can expect too much of a Republican, that they should be out there every day condemning what he does, right? That's easier for me to say. It's easier for someone on my side to say it. But I do think that there are lines that have been crossed, and that's the world's greatest understatement, by this president. I think Republicans should be a lot more honest and honorable about condemning his behavior, condemning his statements. But I will say that they are complicit because he's given them a lot of what they wanted. They wanted that tax bill in the worst way. It's something they've been working on for 50 years, and he gave it to them. They wanted those appellate court judge appointments, and he gave it to them. So he's given them a lot, the rules on the environment and undermining the EPA, blowing up the progress we've made on climate. He's given the right wing virtually everything they wanted. But at times, I think you have to figure out a way to set aside how much you're frustrated by, outraged by, or at least disappointed by the other side. Because if you spend your whole day in the Senate cursing the darkness, there's not going to be much light. So you have to compartmentalize and say, I don't really like that guy over there did not condemn the president. But I do like what he or she believes in or stands for in this bill. And damn it, I'm going to get that bill passed.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you end up working with people that you don't particularly like. You would not want to have a single beer, let alone 32 beers with them.
Do you have to have 32 beers with them? Is that one of the set rules?
A lot of them, if you had 32, they'd say, thanks for the 32, and I'm going to vote against you every time. So you have to figure out a way to make things work. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to, if we get the majority in 2021, I think we have a shot at it in the Senate. And I think we have a really good shot at electing a Democratic president. We're going to have to think long and hard about how far we go with the natural impetus or drive to seek retribution and scorched earth politics. It's going to be a tough call.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of, we're going to want to right a lot of ongoing wrongs, but we also can't get too high on our horse that we can never have some degree of progress on some big issues.
There were a lot of people when Obama got elected that wanted him to scorch the earth against Bush.
Yes, yeah.
And had he done that, maybe he wouldn't have the political capital or the time to pass the ACA.
Yeah.
And so speaking of the ACA, the president this week did say that he was the one that protected pre-existing conditions. I saw your tweet saying that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But you did run on...
I'd like to be able to say that I invented basketball because I love that sport.
Go ahead. Nothing matters anymore, right?
That was James, Dr. James Naismith, not me.
I have the best hair in this whole city. But you ran on healthcare. That was like the issue at the time. And that was just children's health, not that it's just... But that wasn't a political issue to you, right? Like, this is something that through your work as a father, as a public office, this was something that was important to you. And why should more people get involved and participate in that? Why was that important?
It's a pretty good reason to run for public office, healthcare. You know, if you wanted to pick one issue. Look, I think it will be, to the extent that there is a public policy issue that will drive the 2020 election, it'll be healthcare more than anything, I think. There are a lot of others that are very close second. Climate would be one. Jobs and wages might be another. But I think it'll be the leading issue. And I think the president is frankly acknowledging that, tapping into that, because he knows that if he is seen, as he should be seen, as someone who would not just undermine the protections for a pre-existing condition, but destroying it by supporting the lawsuit. I have a visual aid here. These are the triple threats to healthcare.
Right.
Your own copy of my report.
No one can see that on the podcast.
No, they can see. But here's the headline. This was the headline of this report. I had my staff put together, and I proofread. Mm-hmm. Republicans and Trump's attack on healthcare: the triple threat to America's working families. It's a report from November. Destroying the Affordable Care Act through the lawsuit, dismantling it through sabotage, and destroying or defunding it through the cuts to Medicare and Medicaid that are proposed. So he's worried about healthcare because he knows that the country and people, families across the country, want those protections in place. And we got to fight them on this terrain.
Because you ran for Senate, like if we didn't have the 60 votes for that half a minute we did, the ACA may not have passed.
Exactly.
Maybe something else would have passed, maybe not. And maybe they would have given up the fight because they didn't have enough votes. Had other people not run for Senate, had Doug Jones not run in Alabama, maybe they still would have gone for it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very important. But if you had to leave office tomorrow for whatever reason, hopefully a good reason, there's no good reason, you can look back at that as, would that be your signature thing? Like you're happy that if nothing else got done, I was able, because you saved people's lives by passing that legislation.
Now, I was really fortunate to have been not only working on those issues, but to be in the Senate in that moment of that 15 minutes when we had 60 votes. And I distinctly remember passing, we passed the Affordable Care, or the version of the Affordable Care Act, and Christmas Eve of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, we lost our 60th vote when Scott Brown won in Massachusetts. And then Nancy Pelosi said, let's keep going. And I remember thinking, wow, that may not be the greatest strategy. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi was, again, right.
She seems to be a lot lately.
She kept driving, and Harry Reid. I think that the two of them deserve credit for leading that effort, along with President Obama, obviously. But the three of them all had to be committed to finally getting it done. But would we have been able to do that in March of 2010 and actually enacting it into law if we didn't have 60 votes in December of 2009 to get the Senate bill or Senate version done? Maybe not. So we were fortunate to have that. We were fortunate to have that moment.
Now I know that you had. This is a little bit more lighthearted, I guess. But you talked about being governor, and Governor Wolf has a lieutenant governor. You don't have anyone there, though. You do have amazing staff.
Yeah.
From what other people, a friend of mine from another senator's office said that you staffed your office uniquely to focus on healthcare. Is that right? That you've tasked them as this is a very important thing.
I wanted to make sure we had lots of talent on the staff, lots of ability to dig into this issue. Because look, it's even if we didn't have these three threats, the lawsuit, the sabotage, and the budget cuts, even if those threats weren't there, we need a ton of work done every day, every week, every month on healthcare. So a lot more to do, and you gotta have the team to do it.
So the governor and the lieutenant governor have a little funny videos back and forth. And I have this idea, since I only have a couple minutes left. We have...
How could they have something funny? They're like the same person. They're so much alike.
I know.
How could that happen?
We have Congresswoman Susan Wilde.
Yeah.
And you're Bob Casey.
Right.
So what if you guys created your own buddy videos called A Wilde and Casey Idea?
Wow. That is brilliant.
After a few minutes, after a few videos, you could get
Tony,
Dan
you should
Aykroyd.
Run for office. No, you already did.
Yes. And then you could have other people on. Just like, what are you doing? We're a Wilde and Casey guys.
It's a great idea. I just don't want to drag down Susan Wilde's popularity with teaming up with me, but I'd consider it.
Well, as long as you'll consider it, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking up these issues. My mother has MS. My grandmother had Parkinson's. Like, healthcare, wow. Everyone's got an issue with it. So, I called up people after that vote and said, thank you so much. It means a lot to me. And I think it means a lot to Pennsylvanians that you've delivered on those things.
Well, Tony, thanks. And I'm grateful you're willing to sit down. And I would just urge those who are listening, if you're considering running for office, just run. You really need people to dive into this because it's not only a privilege, but our country needs you. As Martin Luther King said a long time ago, everybody can be great because everyone can serve. And service is a great way to give back.
Well, it's a great quote to have as we approach MLK Day. Thank you so much, Senator Casey. And if you're listening, I hope you consider getting involved and maybe run for office yourself.